Nozi, answer your phone. Mai is dead. I was seated before a 2,000-strong audience, moderating a strong lineup of panelists. The stakes were higher than the normal studio-based conversation. We were broadcasting live into 48 African countries, and there were at least 8 million people watching in that moment. The producer in my ear gave me a 30-second countdown to the advertisements. I steered us successfully to the break, quickly pulled my phone from beneath my bum to find my sister's 3 successive text messages. They were like fists to my throat. 3 days before, I was in a different province, basking in the heat of Limpopo, eating chotlo and drinking khemer. Rory and I loved road trips, so when a long weekend with an invitation to attend a tombstone unveiling ceremony in Limpopo came up, we immediately said yes. I tried to escape the heat and found a sliver of shade under the white tent where the formal speeches were taking place. We were giggling at the uncle who'd captivated the audience in his inebriated state, insisting on recounting memories of the deceased in a version of English that few of us could understand. My phone rang. It was Baba. He could wait. I would call after the speeches were done. The phone rang again. Baba wouldn't call twice unless something was wrong, so I stepped out of the shade of the tent and away from the crowd. Uma wakuwile. Baba spoke in uncharacteristically short and staccato sentences. My mother had collapsed, he told me, and he didn't know what to do. Could I come home? I made my way back to the tent, dazed, sat down next to Rory and just stared ahead. The uncle was still speaking, sniggers continuing to ripple through the crowd. Rory turned to me so we could share a laugh, but he saw that my face had turned to stone. He took my hand, got me to stand, and led me away from the tent. I can recall the 20-second conversation with my father, but the rest is a blur. I remember getting into the car, but I don't remember the 9-hour drive from Mwahereleng in Limpopo to Lincoln Mead in Pietermaritzburg, and I'm sure that I must have made calls on the way to establish which hospital my mother was in. I flew through the entrance at Northdale Hospital, navigating the maze that made up the labyrinth of the public health facility. With little signage, I stopped a nurse in the passageway to get the directions I needed. I rushed onwards. It was visible that she'd had a stroke. The left side of my mother's face was sagging, her speech was slurred, her eyes were darting wildly in what appeared to be confusion and fear. More worryingly, my father told me that Uma had not yet received any medical care since arriving almost 10 hours earlier. Why was she in a public hospital? We'd had the medical aid conversation only a few months earlier. My mom had called wanting to understand the difference between medical aid and a hospital plan and very proudly announced that she could now, as a teacher, afford to put herself and my father on a comprehensive plan. We never spoke of it again and I hadn't followed up. But I couldn't focus on that now. I made frantic calls to friends who were doctors. Everyone was gentle with me and relentless in getting my mother the help she needed. We managed to get a doctor to attend to her while we awaited an ambulance that would transfer her to a private hospital. The siren of the ambulance and the wheels of the stretcher bed making its way towards us was all that I needed to hear. I started to breathe again. I'd saved the day. True to the dichotomy of the South African health system, the private hospital had a team of doctors waiting to receive and attend to her. When we were finally able to see Uma, the news was better than expected. The neurosurgeon confirmed the stroke, but said my mother was showing all the signs of being able to recover without surgical intervention. Ma was strong and was clearly fighting to stay with us. By the next day, my mother's eyes were still, and while her speech was still slurred, she pointed to her water when she wanted to drink and was showing signs of coming back to us. Even in this moment of frailty and physical weakness, I could see and feel my mother's fight. We didn't need words to communicate. Her work was just not yet done. I knew it and she knew it. In the silence of the ward, punctuated only by the incessant beeps of the machines and the murmured prayers of families around their own loved ones, our silent conversation was loud.